Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and that you're joining us today. Every week, we have another interesting person in sports medicine and human performance, and this week is no exception. We are pleased to have with us Dr. John Lawler here, who is a professor in the Department of Health and Kinesiology here at Texas A&M. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you, Professor Lightfoot. Pleasure to be here.
And we've asked, John is one of our senior faculty members, one of our exercise physiology senior faculty members. And
keep emphasizing senior.
Senior, yeah, many times. And he has his PhD in exercise physiology with a minor in medical physiology from the University of Florida. And being an old Tennessee alumni, I won't hold that against you today. So, but we have a lot of friends at the University of Florida, don't we?
We have a lot of people in common there.
That's right, yeah. You know, the world of sports medicine and exercise phys is a pretty small world.
It is.
We all kind of know a lot of folks together. Let me tell everybody a little bit about John. He has had funding quite a bit in the past, including funding from the American Lung Association, from the American Heart Association. He is the director of the Redox Biology and Cell Signaling Laboratory here. His laboratory investigates the role of pro-oxidants in normal skeletal muscle function as well as skeletal muscle dysfunction with physical inactivity and disease. And that's a mouthful. So, John, we're going to ask you to interpret that. So what does your lab look at?
Yeah, in a nutshell, what we do is we focus on the way oxidative stress, that's from free radicals, helps muscles as well as hurts them. So we also branch out occasionally into the other type of striated muscle, that's the heart.
So before we go on now, we have to clarify, what are free radicals? These are not people that have been released from prison that are radical.
There are a few outside Austin. They're everywhere, including inside our body.
And we have friends at University of Texas, so we can say that safely. Yeah,
that's right. So free radicals are basically very reactive compounds. They have an unpaired electron in the outer orbital, to be technical, but basically they can react with lots of stuff through oxidation and reduction reactions. So it's some of the oldest chemistry in nature, and it's been around for a long time, and our bodies have learned how to utilize it. Unfortunately, oftentimes it gets a bad name, but it's an important part of metabolism, the way muscles function in terms of contractility, the way the heart works. They're in every single type of biological function you could probably think of.
I mean, people know of ozone.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly reactive species.
Don't breathe it.
Don't breathe it. That's right. Yeah. So we got free radicals everywhere.
There are. And you know, some of the most important, one of those is nitric oxide, which has gotten a lot of press, positive press, in the last 15 years and won three Americans a Nobel Prize in 1998.
There you go.
So they're as good for you as they are bad for you.
So we're going to talk about antioxidants. And, you know, people hear a lot about antioxidants. So help the audience understand how antioxidants are related to free radicals.
Sure. In the body, we'll start there. There are some antioxidants inside the cell that we call scavengers. These are basically similar to like vitamin C and vitamin E. Mm. So there's a protein called, a peptide called glutathione, for example, which is a potent antioxidant. Uric acid is another a potent scavenger. We also have basically a family of enzymes or proteins that basically, I don't want to say detoxify, but get the levels of free radicals and oxidative stress just right. It's like Goldilocks. You don't want it too high. Don't want it too low.
Keeps it in the Goldilocks zone. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, so see, these antioxidants, they're a protective kind of mechanism.
Yes,
they help keep everything kind of balanced.
Right.
Cool. So how are they good for us?
Antioxidants. Ooh.
Or are they good for us?
Well, that's a really good question. If, for example, someone is either sick or getting older, then we might want to start thinking about including those in a regimen. You have to be very careful because they're involved in normal biological function. So, for example, probably the best example and simplest example I can think of is that when muscles are relaxed or quiescent, they're a little bit on the reduced side. So if we actually add some auxins, we can get muscles to contract harder. We can get them to increase their force production. For example, the beginning of exercise, I think it's exactly what we see, is that as muscles start to contract, there's an increase in reactive oxygen species that are released, possibly from the mitochondria, but it appears that there's some proteins along the membrane that do much of that in response to stretch and contractions. And they help to regulate metabolism, glucose uptake, contractility. So it's an important regulator in terms of the way muscles function. So probably for a number of athletes, especially sprinters, for example, or people who are in good shape and not overtraining, antioxidants might be the last thing they want.
Right. So do we get antioxidants from any other place, or do we have to take supplements to get antioxidants?
Well, the best way is your mom or grandma would have said, your fruits and vegetables. That's the primary way to get them. In fact, they're in sort of the right mixture. And probably the greater variety you have in your diet with your fruits and vegetables, probably the better.
Cool. So a good diet, good nutritional diet.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not enough. Sometimes supplements are needed.
Yeah, for example, people with a neuromuscular disease, like Duchenne muscular dystrophy, there's some evidence now that indicates that maybe the right type of targeted antioxidants might be beneficial for them. And that's part of the problem, though, is that when we use very general antioxidants, like, for example, vitamin E and vitamin C, they may not target the disease that is affecting an individual. And if it has to do with aging, well, it's very complicated as well, even though it appears that antioxidants may be helpful there. Sometimes it's a matter of taking what we would call a substrate, like L-arginine, for example. This is a substrate for nitric oxide synthase. This is a protein that makes nitric oxide. So nitric oxide helps to regulate basically metabolism, blood flow. There's a whole host of things. So L-arginine, in some cases, may be a little low in the body. So taking a supplement may not be a bad idea for someone who's older. There is some testing going on for people with, say, muscular dystrophy as well. So for folks who have either are sick or older, or perhaps athletes who are overtraining, then we might want to address this with perhaps some antioxidants. But for the most part, a multivitamin, fruits and vegetables are the way to go for most people.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. You've just supported what we had Dr. Mick Deutz on the podcast a few weeks back, and that's what he talked about, was especially in the older individuals, arginine, and some of those links were up in that podcast note. So, folks, you've heard it now from two different sources. That
we didn't even talk to each other about.
Yeah, sometimes those are good things. So one of the interesting questions that we got, Dr. Lawler, from one of our producers as a guide for all this conversation is, can creatine exhibit antioxidant properties? We hear a lot about creatine.
It's funny you should mention that. We've actually tested that, and believe it or not, in skeletal muscle, it appears it probably has some antioxidant properties. It has been tested, again, with patients with neuromuscular diseases, and there do seem to be some benefits related to their antioxidant properties. In addition, creatine, in some cases, can increase protein synthesis. Again, in a healthy athlete, I'm not so sure, but you know, there's very literature that suggests sometimes yes, sometimes no in terms of protein synthesis. But as an antioxidant, it's okay.
Yeah, but you mentioned right there, and let's loop back to that. The patients with neuromuscular diseases. What kind of neuromuscular diseases are you talking about there?
Well, for example, like Duchenne or limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, these are usually caused by a mutation for a protein that usually sits up by the cell membrane. Helps to stabilize skeletal muscle, helps to regulate growth and repair. And the way to think about this is that most people have a pretty good idea about if they're doing, let's say, some exercises for the first time in a while or some weightlifting, they're going to feel sore a day or two later. So we have a term for this. It's called delayed onset muscle soreness, or DOMS. So people with a lot of these neuromuscular diseases have very unstable membranes. The scaffolding around there, basically the way the proteins are put together there to try to stabilize muscles, they don't really work very well. So there's a lot of damage. There's a lot of soreness. So it's like having delayed onset muscle soreness all the time.
And that makes them even less likely to do exercise.
So in those individuals, they have really high levels of oxidative stress. So most of us have, we would say, kind of nominal to low levels of oxidative stress. which again is important in regulating growth and repair and glucose metabolism and metabolism. And the high levels of oxidative stress in people who have these neuromuscular diseases, much higher than we would normally see, for example, in a typical healthy person or an athlete.
Mm-hmm. So creatine might help as a supplement in these folks. May not be as useful in some of the athletic populations, but
yeah, there's mixed results there.
Yeah,
yeah. So you'll gain weight, and there's some argument about how much of this is true protein synthesis and how much of this is water weight, et cetera.
Yeah. But, you know, there's several health conditions that are associated with oxidative stress. And is it the oxidative stress causes these health conditions, or is the health conditions causing the oxidative stress? I mean, is it the chicken and egg kind of thing?
Yeah, that's the $64 billion question, I guess, in this case. In the case of cardiovascular disease and hypertension, there's a good bit of evidence that suggests that levels of oxidative stress, which normally could be managed, are considerably too high. So there's one of the proteins that lives up at the membrane is called NOX2, is a funny name. So this appears to be high in people who have high blood pressure and also probably high in people who have atherosclerosis as well. So it may be part of the disease process. So indeed, we've been looking at medicines that have antioxidant properties as well as antioxidant supplementation to try to deal with this. Some of the medicines that are out there to treat high blood pressure, for example, candesartan, some of the angiotensin receptor blockers or ARBs or ACE inhibitors, they actually have antioxidant properties. So it's these side effects that actually are a real bonus for these medicines, as well as reducing, you know, blood pressure by relaxing the smooth muscle in the arteries and arterioles.
They're doing some other things they didn't expect.
Yeah, so sometimes, you know, some of these medicines that have antioxidant properties, some of that's just a good side benefit, a bonus. Sometimes the side effect's a good thing.
Yeah.
Most of the time not, but in this case, yes.
Yes. Well, we've been talking about supplementation and eating right and so forth, and we haven't talked yet about exercise and what exercise does to the whole oxidative stress system.
Yeah.
We'll call it that for the time being.
Yeah, it's a wonderful question because it leads to really how we respond to exercise. So when people are exercising, you actually get an increase in oxidative stress. It's probably okay. One of the things that helps to do is it helps the muscles as well as the body to respond in increasing its own antioxidant enzymes as well as scavengers. So our antioxidant capacity is actually boosted. This turns out to be very cardioprotective. It seems to be protective for the heart against ischemia, so heart disease, heart attacks, may reduce fibrosis in the heart as we get older, so it may help the heart to maintain good function as we get older. In skeletal muscle, we also see some significant number of benefits as well. Many of the antioxidant and enzymes, those are increased. We have a number of other protective proteins. There's one group that I like in particular, they call heat shock proteins. So they respond to being in a sauna. They also respond to the cold as well. So when there's environmental stress or exercise, they go up. And they're very protective of both heart and muscles. In fact, there's a whole set of literature that's looking at the ability of these heat shock proteins to be able to reduce muscle hypertrophy as well as manage strength gains when someone is a weight training. So it's an exciting area as we get to learn really how muscles work, and it's interesting that oxidative stress and nitric oxide turns out to be an important part of that.
Do you see the same response in these antioxidant systems whether you're doing resistance training or aerobic continuous training? I mean, in your response there, you talked about resistance training, and we kind of talked about aerobic training. So, do you see the same response, or
they're not quite the same, but there is protection in both cases.
Yeah.
So, antioxidant enzymes, for example, will increase with both sprint training as well as endurance training.
So, being active.
Yeah, just helps. Being active, getting out there.
So we said to increase these antioxidant properties, we need to eat correctly, maybe take supplements, but exercise is a huge deal.
Yeah, when you put those together, that really optimizes things. It's easy to say, but it's something we forget about.
Yeah, that's many people forget about, right?
On a daily basis, I can vouch for that.
How do you go about examining the effects of antioxidants? I mean, we've been talking about this. This is all cellular, molecular processes.
Sure.
Do you take people and take chunks of their muscle, or how do you do these kind of things, John?
Well, if you're going to look at, you know, the amount of the enzymes themselves and what's in there, you'd probably have to do some biopsies. But a lot of times we're interested in outcomes as well. So there have been some classic studies done with fatigue, for example, with people. This is about 15 to 20 years ago, where they demonstrated that, in one case, too much oxidative stress was responsible for fatigue. So you can kind of go over the edge, even with exercise. So fatiguing exercise, overtraining, they can increase oxidants to the point where our body's antioxidant system can't really handle it very well.
Cool. You know, this is, it's really interesting, and it's almost, the idea here is almost we see the antioxidants as a preventative medicine. You know, with exercise and good nutrition, you're going
right.
to boost all this, which is going to help.
Yeah.
And this may seem to be a little bit of a 9-degree shift, but it's really not. And that is, you know, your undergraduate degree is in biomedical engineering.
No, right.
How did you get interested in the antioxidants? I mean, that's one of the things we talk about on the podcast.
Sure.
Is what gives you passion about this?
Yeah.
What is this that makes it interesting?
A long time ago, I had an instructor, really professor. His name was Howard Clark at Duke.
Hmm.
And Dr. Clark was actually a chemical engineer.
Hmm.
And so we took a polymer class. This is one of the most fun classes I had in engineering school. Because one of the things that Dr. Clark would do is he would actually take some plastics and he would burn them. So we would actually look at the flame and the color of the smoke and be able to identify what's PVC pipe from another type of plastic. So one of the things about that is plastics are often produced by taking monomers, by small chemicals, and making chains out of them, making polymers out of them. So one of the ways to do that is actually through free radicals.
Hmm.
And in industry for years, they actually used to use catalase to slow down and stop the reaction.
Wow.
So a lot of people make use of it every day. So
they're using an organic compound to stop a kind of an inorganic process.
Yeah. So this is not quite the same thing, but when people are, say, cleaning their contact lenses, a lot of times the solution is hydrogen peroxide, and the little pills are catalase.
Oh, really?
And the bubbles you see are oxygen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So
that's how
those of you listening, if you're cleaning your contacts and you see bubbles, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I got started. And when I was a graduate student at LSU, we got interested in how the diaphragm and how skeletal muscles were adapting. So one of the professors there was William Pryor, and I saw him speak a couple of times about oxidative stress. And so I was really interested in this, and I wanted to apply this to some biological models. So at the time, we got started in actually measuring changes in antioxidant enzymes in response to exercise training. So in terms of laboratory research, it was really through the exercise response that we got involved.
Because it boosts the antioxidants,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so that was really fun to see. And as we tested it, we got to learn, you know, more about how they were working and how they were protecting proteins from degrading, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. And since then, we branched out to all kinds of areas, disuse, aging, muscular dystrophy. You pretty much name it. We've tried it.
Yeah. Well, and it shows the ubiquity of the system.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
Yeah.
And the biological part of it, I think, just simply can't be forgotten. And it's very fortunate that we bestowed the Nobel Prize in 1998 for nitric oxide and its function in the cardiovascular system. It basically makes arterioles and arteries dilate, so your blood vessels dilate, so you get more blood flow.
Well, you know, the great thing about this, because it's involved in so many biological systems, is that the work that you do can be applied to so many different situations. And that's, I think the public forgets that. Scientists seem to have a very narrow focus, but oftentimes they have big applications.
Yeah, that's one of the most exciting aspects of it, is we do, I think, get to apply it, and with the faculty we have and have added at Texas A&M, we hope to translate our findings into what we think are real medicines and real therapeutic strategies for patients that make them better.
Yeah. Now, as a scientist, when you write your papers, you have to be very direct, and you report what you found. And
dry.
We'll say dry.
Sometimes.
But, you know, I think the most fun part for scientists is that we do get to speculate.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to ask you to speculate. What's coming? What do you think in 5 years? Where do you think we will have found out in regards to the antioxidants?
Wow.
I'm actually asking you to put on your science fiction hat here.
Yeah. I think we're to the point where we can actually measure reactive oxygen species inside the cell and at specific locations. That's been one of the problems, is being able to try to identify what's going wrong and where. And that explains sometimes when in the past people have tried vitamin E to treat Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It hasn't really worked very well. Or sometimes it works with heart disease and sometimes it doesn't. So part of the problem has been the non-specificity in our approach to using antioxidants. Mm. So as we discover which specific targets are the good guys and bad guys, and sometimes they're both, and you have to figure out when you want to turn them on and when to turn them off, we'll be able to address that. And I think one of the most important things is how that's going to interact with exercise as part of the therapeutics, because I think it's going to be very important for just about everybody. Today, for example, exercise is used as part of the therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's used for arthritis as well. Mm-hmm. The last thing people would do is exercise. To exercise.
Yeah.
But now you combine it with some really good medicines today, like Enbrel, that work really wonderfully for people who have rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. So another example of where we need to do exercise.
Yeah.
We keep coming back to that. We've got to be active. Yeah.
No, it's part of our genes, and when we get away from that, our genes, Mother Nature responds, and sometimes not in a good way.
That's right. Don't fool with Mother Nature.
Don't fool with Mother Nature.
So, John, thank you so much for being here. We're kind of running short on time. That's the signal I'm getting.
It's been a pleasure.
And so we always like to have you have our guests tell us what their take-home message is. What's your take-home message from all this today?
The take-home message is, I think, eat your fruits and vegetables.
Mm, very good.
Exercise. You know, maybe take a multivitamin. If you're unfortunate to be afflicted by a disease of some type, a chronic disease, whether it be heart disease, talk to your physician. Talk to some of the exercise people. Come here and look at not only the podcast, but try to get information from the Huffine Center and the American College of Sports Medicine. There are a lot of experts out there who I think can help us and help the public to get in the right direction in terms of health related to free radicals. So, again, it's the Goldilocks story. Not too many. Not too little. Just right.
Just right. Great take-home message.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Thanks.
And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to download us and listen today. As always, at the end of each podcast, we have the podcast question of the week. And with that podcast question is Cheryl.
What types of foods can a person eat if they want to add more antioxidants to their diet?
Excellent question. Be the first one to email us the correct answer at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. And you'll win one of those nifty podcast t-shirts. I keep saying hurry because we are running very low on these. And if you want a second edition shirt, you'll need to get that answer in soon. So thank you all for being with us again today. Thank you for taking the time to download us. John, thank you for being with us.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I'll take a t-shirt while I can.
There you go. And we hope that you all join us next week for another interesting person in the world of sports medicine and human performance. And until then, we want you to stay active and healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, and our music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.